is the Her Earth Medicine podcast, based around traditional Eastern medicine and naturopathic insight to support wellness and longevity. My name is Sandy Ross, and I am a naturopath and practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Her Earth Medicine podcast, Layla.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So today we're going to be having a little chat about, I guess, the fourth trimester and sort of defining a little bit what it means and what it also means to sort of have a village alongside that journey of coming into being, I guess, a new mother and motherhood. So maybe before we dive into that, do you want to tell us how you kind of got on the path of working with postnatal mums and, you know, creating a bit of a village for mamas?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the start of the story was I finished uni and opened a little takeaway Mexican restaurant. And after 3 years, I decided that it was time to move on. And the day it sold, I found out I was pregnant. So that sort of really changed my direction in life. Because I was, I guess, unemployed for the duration of my pregnancy, I spent my pregnancy doing a lot of research and reading and started discovering things like the golden month, the first 40 days. I've spent a lot of time researching birth, and I started to feel like it really spoke to me. I really loved learning about it. So then when I gave birth, I decided that I'd really like to experience more of a slow postpartum, but was lucky enough to have my mum close by. So she really supported that journey for me. She bought me nourishing food every day. And it really, really transformed my experience, especially when I compared it to other mums in my circle of friends that didn't have that level of support and nourishment. And I felt that they really needed that too. So I guess my experience led me down the path of seeing how I could help other mums experience the same thing that I did.
Yeah, lovely. I did a confinement period with my children as well, and there was a big difference because you've just got the one at the moment, don't you? So I think the big difference with confinement period is the first baby. It's probably the best to try and plan and do it with the first baby because it's so much easier. It can be slow and everything. And then you've really got to reach out to the village, as you talk about, when you have more than one child, because you really do need that support network. You know, if you've got a child that needs to go to school or kindy or get out of the house, and a big part of the postpartum period is, well, they call it sitting the month, is staying home. So what, you just hung out at home for the 40 days, ate some beautiful food, had a bit of like a women's community come and help you out. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about your confinement period?
Yeah, so I didn't go for the full 40 days. I did 3 weeks before I left my house. I felt that was all I was able to do. I live in a small apartment, so I sort of, after the 3 weeks, I started going for really gentle walks along the beach and still kept it very slow, but didn't stay at home for the full 40 days. In terms of a village, I mainly have my mum. My mum really, really supported me. She brought us food every day. I also have my younger sister who, she had no idea what was going on. She obviously had never experienced someone close to having a baby before, but she was really great at, I guess, running errands for me and, getting me whatever I needed. I think that's what you were saying before about when you have other kids. I think that's a real common misconception, is that once mums have already had one baby that they don't need as much help the second, third or fourth time round because they know what they're doing because they've experienced it before. But, yeah, it is quite the opposite. I think the more babies that you have, the more support you need to get you through those early weeks and months, I guess. It's not just a six-week thing. It definitely goes beyond that.
Yeah, definitely. And in Asian countries, so I practiced over in Bangkok for about 4 years, and I got to learn a lot about the culture over there and how they, you know, perform their postpartum period. And that was working with the Indians and also the Thais, and then obviously I understand and do Chinese medicine, so I have a big understanding for the Asian aspect. But then my mother-in-law is actually African, so then she brought her kind of cultural background and you know, gave me her education on what they do in Africa. And what I learned is that every single culture around the world actually has a confinement period. And, you know, they all do it in their own way that works for them. It's us in the West that don't have any sort of, you know, postnatal support. We get all the antenatal care that we need. You know, we have so many midwife appointments and whatnot. But once you have the baby and, like, as a new mum, it's so overwhelming. It's sort of like, see you later. We'll give you, like, a six-week checkup sort of thing and, you know, maybe read some baby books and learn what to do. But I think, you know, we've disconnected from the women in our lives and really reaching out. It can be overwhelming because you can get like heaps of opinions from so many people. And, you know, it can become annoying in a way, I guess, when you've got so many people telling you how to do it. But I think if we open our minds and our perception more to taking in the advice and help and kind of using it as a community and support network rather than thinking of people telling us how to raise our children, we could sort of wean back into that sort of, you know, cultural aspect of sitting the month. And that's what I love about what you've got going on in your little community. It's about reaching out to the women, and obviously you go into the food and whatnot, which is really important. But do you want to talk to us about, you know, supporting the mother a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's quite interesting when you look at traditional practices from around the world, that when a mother today has her baby, the wisdom is passed down from her mother, her grandmother, her great-grandmother of how to protect and nurture that mother and her space after she gives birth. Whereas I feel like in the Western world, we're starting to go backwards a little bit in the sense that we're starting to gain this information and we're then passing it back up to our mother and our grandmother and asking them to support us through this period of time. So it's quite... I know it's quite funny the way it's reversed a little bit. But I do also feel like, I guess in anything you do fall into a bit of an echo chamber, especially on social media, where you start to discover something and then you start hearing it everywhere. And I feel like there's an issue with that, with especially pregnant and postpartum mothers, is that they start reading and learning about sitting the month or a slow postpartum or nourishing the fourth trimester, but it's only other pregnant and postpartum women that are finding that information, and it's really breaking through and sharing it with friends and family that aren't familiar with those principles and that level of support, and bringing them in and bringing them on the journey with you. Because the pillars of postpartum, so your rest, your nourishment, your warmth, I feel like all of them rely so heavily on the support factor, because in order for you to really practice all of those elements, you need the people around you helping you through. It's not something that you can do alone. It really isn't.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, actually. So I'm one of six children, and my mother is like a soldier. She like did it all herself. She really didn't have, I suppose she had like, they grew up on land, so she had like other aunties and stuff, of my aunties, sorry, around, so all the kids could play together. But her mother was never involved in the raising of the children and the helping out. So when I was reaching out, you know, mum was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is all you, you've got this, don't worry. Like, you don't need me to come and help. Versus my mother-in-law, who obviously she's African, so she comes from that kind of understanding about what they do to support the woman. And I'm pretty sure she's also said that the men don't even come visit in that first 40 days. And that's an African society, so there might be other reasons that come into that. But, yeah, it's hard in a way in the Western culture to sort of, I guess, break the you know, perception we have around asking for help, because it's almost like perceived that you're not able to cope and you're not good enough, and that you know. So what I like about breaking the dogma down.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, asking for help is, we associate it with failure, that we can't do this, that we're incapable. And especially women, I think women really struggle to ask for help. And if people say, is there anything I can do to help? You're like, no, I'm fine. And you don't mean that. It's just your sort of default setting is to go, no, I'm fine, I've got this. But I think another way to look at it as well is people would be honoured to help and support you if you just asked, or if you just said to them, hey, could you do this for me? People want to help each other. And it's human nature to want to stand by someone and support someone through something. So, I think we need to get better as a society at making it okay to ask for help and normalise that support.
Yeah, and I know, I think I read on your website that you got on this journey by listening to Dr. Oscar down in, I think he's in Mullum, with his postnatal depletion cure. And he's amazing. I love his work. And, you know, he really talks about having staff come instead of visitors, because that postnatal period, especially for a new mother, can be very overwhelming. You've got a new baby, you're learning to breastfeed, you've then got to make food for yourself, potentially for your husband that's at work, you then got visitors coming in that want to see the baby and you're trying to breastfeed and maybe you don't want to get your breast out, and then you're trying to make them a cup of tea and maybe feed them lunch because they're there at lunchtime, and it can be very overwhelming. And some women might actually really struggle with that. You know, this is a time where women feel very vulnerable in their mental health. They might be having postnatal depression even kick in, the baby blues, all those kind of big emotions. And then we're expected to sort of, yeah, host a party basically when lots of people want to come in and visit. So his philosophies are really amazing around, you know, having staff versus having visitors.
Even if you are struggling, it's really nice to have a helping hand. It makes life so much easier, regardless of what it is. You don't have to be struggling for someone, there to be value in someone stepping in to lend a helping hand.
Mm. And the thing is, so when I think like the first 40 days is actually very slow. Baby sleeps like I think 18 hours a day. So it's actually not that hectic unless you do have a baby with potentially colic or something like that. And your baby's screaming all the time, that can be very hectic. But the depletion really kicks in the months after having a baby, where you've, you know, been breastfeeding for several months, not getting sleep, and then, you know, life kind of returns back to normal. Maybe you have to go back to work. And so in Chinese medicine, postpartum is actually 5 years. So you are postpartum for 5 years, which is amazing. When we just think of it here as, you know, postpartum is a month or something like that. So, you know, I really influence, you know, the support to come maybe in the months after having a baby, you know, around that 3 to 6 months is probably where mums most need the support. Baby's getting a bit more active, you know, life has returned to normal. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit more about some of the other aspects that you think are really important for supporting the mum in this phase?
As in the postpartum phase or moving beyond the postpartum?
Well, I guess from, postpartum sort of to that 6 months period, what are some of the key things you look at there?
Well, I mean, like you said, postpartum is in Chinese medicine 5 years. And I feel like your depletion does start to kick in much later. But what we do initially, so like even preconception, then through pregnancy and postpartum, what we're doing for ourselves then, especially in terms of nutrition, is what really sets the foundation to help stop depletion from being as severe as it can be. And I mean, my daughter was a surprise. I hadn't done anything in terms of preconception, and I'm really looking forward to, with our next baby, having a putting some practices in place to really support both me and my husband for our preconception phase. I'm not a huge fan of the word postpartum period because it is synonymous with the 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's why I really love that fourth trimester, because it gives mums, I mean, it's still not the world of time, but it gives mums more of a window of understanding that they need to take things slow and they shouldn't be out, I don't know, going for a run or, you know, whatever it is. They do really need to honour that they are still healing and recovering from birth and adjusting to their role as a mother. I feel like that's something too that's often never spoken about, is how much women change on not just a physical level but an emotional and spiritual level when they go through childbirth and become a mother. And I think readjusting into society with your new identity is definitely much longer than 3 months, or in some cases longer than 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. I really like how you touched on sort of making sure you're well-nourished in those first days after birth to prevent some of the postnatal depletion that follows that. So maybe let's talk about food a little bit, because this is something that you're, you know, you've got some beautiful recipes available. I've checked out all your stuff. It looks delicious. Is it convenient? Do you want to take us down the rabbit hole of, like, where your philosophies sit with food and how to make it work for that new mother?
Well, after experiencing those early weeks myself, I felt that there was nothing more helpful than food being delivered. You're ravenous. Sometimes it's hard to hard to do anything without holding the baby. So you're walking around holding the baby. the can hardly open a fridge, let alone prepare food. So having food ready to go is, to me, the most helpful thing in the world. If your partner's, say, out at work for the day, having him or them come home to be able and be able to support you and spend time with you and the baby and not have to stand in the kitchen, I just feel like food is the biggest love language of that postpartum period, and the most supportive thing someone can do for you is deliver food. So that was where my, I was listening to a podcast with Dr. Russell Sarilac, and he was talking about nourishing the mother after she gives birth so that she doesn't end up depleted. And I was listening to that information and I was feeling a little bit guilty and sad for mums, because the last thing that they have time for is preparing food, let alone thinking about what food they're preparing. Which is why I really wanted to come up with a solution that made it easier for mums to ask for food and for food to become a normal thing that people do when a mother has a baby and deliver it to her.
So what are some of the key things that you look for in postpartum nutrition?
So especially during the early days, so I guess days three from 1 to 10, is making sure the food is warm. So no raw foods or cold foods, soft, easy to digest. I mean, where the placenta was, you've got the wound the size of a dinner plate ceiling. All your organs are slowly moving back to their original home. So, your digestion is definitely compromised. Warm, soft and easy to digest food is sort of, I guess, the three main things that you should focus on, especially in those early days. And nutrient dense as well. So eating foods are going to really help replenish your stores as opposed to further deplete you.
Do you want to give us a few examples of some of the things that you think are really valuable for a postpartum mum to be eating?
Yeah, so one of my absolute favourite dishes, especially for those early days, is congee. It's really soft. It's easy to digest. I love preparing congee with bone broth, because I think bone broth is an absolutely wonderful food for mums postpartum. Lots of soups, stews, broths, anything, warm and easy to digest is, perfect for the mum, especially in those early days. And I know there's a little bit of, is it Chinese or Ayurveda don't like giving ginger to mums in the early?
They can be if there's a bit of heat in the system, but we actually do give ginger. Definitely, because it's warming and we're building up the yang.
Warming.
You don't warming, if there's infection, that's all.
Yeah, so ginger, turmeric, cinnamon, anything that's going to keep the mother warm.
So one of my favourite things I'll just add in there to your beautiful ideas on food is porridge. It's so easy and, congee is amazing, but it is a rice-based one, so it's amazing, but it's obviously new to a lot of people, where porridge, most people aren't going to eat congee for breakfast, but they will eat a porridge. And I love that because it's warm, it's cooked, it's easy to digest. It's a grain that like the Europeans know. So in addition to all those soups and stews and congees, I always, say to mother, the mum, the new mum, porridge, so easy. And you can just if you have to microwave a porridge because you don't have the time, you have to do it. But, there's big takes on that. You can always grate fruit into it and you can add cinnamon and those warming spices as well. So as a good breakfast idea, porridge is also a winner there, I think, for the new mums. And then what about, coming into, because you've got, I guess, a varied timeline of things that you can offer throughout the periods of, being a new mum, because when you're breastfeeding, the demand goes up for your calories, and obviously things change around those couple of months when babies having growth spurts and everything like that. Do you sort of change the nutritional intake there, or do you just kind of try and teach mum and educate on, these are the core nutrients and this is sort of what we're aiming for and these are the philosophies around food? Do you have any approach to the timeline of the nutrient intake?
Not so much in terms of timeline, other than definitely during those early weeks to really focus on those soft, warm, easy to digest foods. I do always encourage mums to make sure they're having really well-balanced meals, so having good source of protein, lots of nourishing healthy fats and carbohydrates, which are really important for healing, energy levels, nourishing breast milk. And then also, yes, I mean, especially if mums have had antibiotics during birth, making sure they're having lots of probiotic-rich foods as well. But, yeah, in terms of moving beyond those early weeks, I just think, yeah, making sure mums are having really beautiful balanced meals and ideally not just snacking here and there and actually having proper meals to sustain them through the day and support breastfeeding. I think, yeah, hydration is something else that's not spoken about as much. And I don't think I've ever been more thirsty than I was when I started breastfeeding. So, yeah, just making sure mums are staying well hydrated and enjoying balanced meals is probably my main focus.
Mm. Yeah, it's a big thing too, and there's a big, I guess, difference between a breastfeeding mother and someone that's not breastfeeding. You know, maybe they've gone through the journey and they've had some problems there, or they've just chosen not to. But yeah, the calorie intake is definitely higher in the demand on breastfeeding, and like you said, hydration, because it's mostly water, breast milk. And yeah, I do think a lot of women don't drink enough water and then they become dehydrated. We really literally are having all our nutrients sucked out of us, and if we're not actually replete, meaning got all our nutrients in, we will actually start to pull all those nutrients out of our resources in the body, so the muscles and the bones and stuff. So your body will actually break down calcium if you're not having enough calcium come in, you know, magnesium, all those sort of things. So if you're not getting enough in the diet, that's where I guess like the need for supplementation and working with someone that I guess can help you support that journey. But yeah, so are there any particular like really, you've talked about bone broth, and I know you had some like, I've seen in your recipe some really like nice black colored things, which in Chinese medicine represents back to the kidneys. I think you were using some noris and stuff like that, black bean stuff. Do you integrate like a little bit of that Ayurveda perspective alongside the TCM? Like, where's your philosophy come from with your nutritional style?
So, yeah, as I was saying to you before we started recording, once I had my baby and I experienced, I wanted to really solve the problem in terms of mums not being supported the way they need to. So I started creating my book, at which point I hadn't done any study or, I guess, formal training in terms of postpartum period. I really just wanted to make it easy for, I guess, modern Australian mums to reach out to their auntie, uncle, friends and ask them to just deliver them food. So I went with really sort of, I worked with a naturopath that helped sort of review all the recipes to make sure they weren't contraindicative to a postpartum mother, but just food that was nourishing and delicious and easy to prepare and not, I guess, intimidating, not using bizarre ingredients or to, I guess, put family members off. I wanted to make it as simple as possible. But while I was creating my book, I started studying with O'Baby Holistic School of Nutrition over in Canada. And they specialise in postpartum pregnancy and then baby nutrition. So I decided to do postpartum and then I went on to do pregnancy nutrition. Yeah, I guess they incorporate a little bit of traditional philosophy when it comes to food, but they don't, I guess you'd say they don't follow a typical TCM or Ayurvedic approach to the postpartum period. But it's definitely something that I'm starting to see and become aware of more and would like to, I guess, dive deeper into that world.
Mm. And it's important to keep the Western aspects there too. So I've been teaching Chinese dietetics almost for 5 years at the college here. And, you know, most of the concepts there are based off like pig trot soup and juk, which is the congee and stuff, like things that people don't eat. So we have to really modernize it. And that's why I love what you've created, because you have really brought in some of the traditional key philosophies, such as the warmth, no cold and raw food and easy to digest. So you're like spot on with all that stuff, which is really important for that new the digestive system of someone who's just given all their energy, because it's so hard to break down cold and raw things. But yeah, really making sure it's practical and something that new mothers are going to eat. Organ meats are something else I also love to try and get postpartum mums to eat, as also, you know, when we start to do food introduction. But you know, it can be something that's, if you haven't eaten an organ before, they're very strong, and you know, these are the sort of things that we have to, especially if we're asking like the village, as you're saying, you know, family members and stuff to try and create some of these recipes, we have to keep it really practical. What's some of the advice you have? Like, is there other things that go alongside with, so you've got these great recipes and whatnot, but how do you communicate on educating these, I guess, support networks and our family members and the people we're reaching out to kind of understand the philosophies of the new mother in terms of, like supporting the new mum?
Yeah, I'll just, before I go on with that, I was just going to say it's funny that you mentioned that because I got gifted a copy of The First 40 Days while I was pregnant, and that was, I guess, the catalyst for me wanting to incorporate a slow postpartum experience into my journey. And I gifted the book to my, reading the book, I realised that in order for me to follow some of those principles, I had to get the people around me to also understand them. And so I gifted the book to my mum who read the book, and she's vegan, so she was sort of a bit like, oh, do I have to make pig trotter soup? Which was, I guess, one of the other reasons that I wanted to create recipes that incorporated the main principles but weren't overwhelming or intimidating for, friends and family. So I guess when it comes to supporting mums and educating the people around you, my book isn't really a recipe book. I guess the main component of it is that all the recipes come on cards, so you can hand them out to the people around you. And I decided to write a letter on the back of every card that sort of, in a really polite way, explain that concept of that Dr. Oscar Serelak says, which is no visitors, only staff. So in a really simple and friendly way, lay down the rules and the boundaries so that the people around new mum understand that they can't just rock up whenever they like. When they are there, they need to lend a helping hand. When they do come, they need to bring nourishing food. I mean, gifts are lovely, flowers are great, but the practicality of a bunch of flowers and a teddy bear it's pointless when a mum's had a baby. So, yeah, I wrote a letter on the back of every recipe that, in a really lovely way, told the people around the new mother how they could really help her during those early weeks of motherhood.
Yeah, that's such a great way of doing it. It's a gentle education all in one on the recipe and a guide to help me. So, yeah, I really like the way you've done that. It's really well put together. So well done on that lovely book. And anyone listening, the book's called It's Village for Mama?
Village for Mama, yeah.
Yeah, and it can be found. Where can people find your book?
I've got a few stock lists, which are listed on my website. But, yeah, probably the easiest way is straight off my website. Or if you want to support a local business, you can click on the stock lists and see if there's anyone near you that sells the book.
Okay, great. Well, any last pearls of wisdom you want to leave us with in regards to whether it's, you know, the fourth trimester, postnatal nutrition, being a mother yourself, or the future things that you've got going on?
I don't know. I guess my goal and my mission is to help as many mums as possible experience a well-supported and nourished fourth trimester. And I think just normalising asking for help and normalising bringing a mum food is, I think all we need to do moving forward. And then once we do have that level normalised, then we can start to weave even more traditional wisdom into the way we support our new mums. And I think there's a lot of power in supporting new mums because I think the future health of our children is based around the health of the mother. So it's definitely shouldn't something that should be forgotten or cast aside.
That's it. Normalising this postnatal period is so what we need. So, you know, coming on and having a chat, which is why I wanted to get you on to have this chat, because, you know, the more people that listen and tune in and start to understand and then pass the message on, you know, we can really try and bring back some culture into our Australian or Western society, wherever you're tuning into, because it's really forgotten. We just haven't connected anymore with that postnatal period, and it's something that hopefully, you know, in a few years' time, or when our children have children, you know, it'll be normalised once again. So beautiful work on what you're doing and your message.
Well, thank you. I was going to say it'd be nice if we can start sharing the wisdom back down as our children have children. children.
That'd
be really nice.
I'll be doing the traditional Chinese mother's thing and hanging string. They hang string along the door so the daughter can't leave the home. And there's a lot of real strict practices that do come in, and I'm going to do a podcast episode. So it'll either be before or after this episode talking a bit more about those strict practices and sort of what they mean. But a lot of it had to do with, keeping baby inside and mother inside out of the wind so you don't get infection or cold. There was practices around things like the water and whatnot so that you don't, because the water wasn't clean. But I'll talk about that at another time. But, yeah, just normalising this whole – go on.
I was just going to say, it's so fascinating. I actually met with a beautiful mother a few days ago who has recently moved from Hong Kong, and she experienced the traditional confinement period. And she was also a personal trainer, and she said that she noticed a huge difference in her mothers that she trained that followed a strict confinement period and the ones that didn't follow one.
Mm.
And I think especially as younger, like if you have babies when you're younger, you do feel invincible. You do feel like you can bounce back, per se, and you do feel like you don't need to sit around and rest. But it's the long-term health effects that have that we need to sort of have the foresight to understand that it is really important, even if it doesn't feel necessary at the time.
Longevity. And that's what some of the traditional practices go into about, like brushing your teeth. If you brush your teeth, it means your teeth can fall out earlier. So there's, and same with washing your hair so your hair doesn't fall with the postpartum hair loss. Yeah, there's so many interesting factors that come into it that, traditional knowledge knows, and now it's just us trying to, dig deep and find this stuff out and share this information. But, yeah, it's a great area to really share far and wide and really try and build a community like you're doing with Village for Mother. So, yeah, I love your work. It's so needed.
Thank
and
you.
Well done.
So
thank you so much for coming on and having a chat about the postnatal period. Be sure to check out her book, and I'll put all the links up to your website and your book on the show notes. Hey guys, I just wanted to tune in quickly and let you know that depending on when you're listening to this podcast, I'm about to launch in the next month or so, or potentially have already launched, my children's health online course, Bloom. So it's about integrating naturopathic and Chinese medicine tools and tricks and dietary philosophies into raising your children naturally. Now, if you'd like to check that out, I'm offering a discount code for $50, which is Bloom, BLOOM. Entered at the checkout will give you $50 off, which brings it just down to $98. So be sure to check that out. Thank you for listening. I have been a practitioner of naturopathic and Chinese medicine for over a decade. I have a master's degree of health science, and I am an academic lecturer at Australia's leading natural medicine college. I am available worldwide online for bookings. Simply go to sandyrosshealth.com.